de conduire en Europe, dealing with the PR and sport. We have to actually speak to your annual report and get confirmation where you have managed to achieve your own strategic objectives, your plan over the past few years under review. And I need to really thank your response to a really great continuity for us to be able to have an opportunity to talk to your annual report in front of you, and also to thank the members that have managed to be here today. It's almost the first day after a brief recess that members of parliament are finding themselves here. I'm sure you may have realized that there is a little bit of tiredness and slowness of us actually getting in and getting ready for the 9:30 meeting. That's because I think it's we're still having some targets of the research students on constituency work that we have been engaged with. And but at least now it looks like we are ready, even though that we are ready some 15 minutes or so late. Also, I think we have talked a lot about Mohamed, who happens to be a member of the State Security Committee, who has just requested to go and create that committee as well, because he's sitting now. It looks like we have got an item where they may need to approve something. Therefore, they need to actually correct in that particular meeting. So he has requested to come in there, and he has requested that the meeting, and then we will join up and it will be there late. All I remember, I think I have two committee members who have apologized, Dr. C.P. Mulder, not be with us, and also Honorable D.J. Rafuti, who I'm told that out of the country. Yes. And then I'm also aware of the Honorable Ned that you will join us a little bit later for some few challenges that we need
MMH are doing quite well. There are difficulty in appointing IT staff with a higher vacancy rate than normal. Deputy managers and assistant managers also have high vacancy rates, and then also electoral project coordinators, particularly in the Eastern Cape, have some high vacancies. Okay, expenditure per staff member is quite good for the IAC, and training is generally a good well-met priority. There's some minor errors discovered in the annual report, where, for instance, the total cost per employee, the total average cost per employee on page 88 is indicated as 4.5 million rand, which should in fact be 72,000. That's they give the total amount rather than the average. There also seems to be an error in the table dealing with equity, where the total number of staff is of 934, but there are equity targets of 1,245. So the IAC, they don't seem to appear to not be achieving any of the equity targets, but there seems to be a miscalculation on the total equity targets. The IAC has reported on the number of persons with disabilities employed after several years of not doing this. However, the targets not yet achieved is not targets are not yet achieved with 11 out of the 12 employees required with disability. But the target, however, should be 2% of the staff complement, which, if looking at the total staff employed of 934, it should actually be 18 positions and not 12 as indicated in that report. And thus, the total percentage of persons with disabilities, in fact, 1.18%. And then the related questions on HR, or total questions to the IEC are then listed over there, which members can refer to. And then lastly, I'm going to briefly look at the GPW. Okay, so the mandate and functions of the GPW, they'll deal with themselves. And the GPW has basically received 5 consecutive unqualified audit opinions. And each year there's a reduction in the number of audit findings. So there are gradual improvements, particularly from 2009-10 where there were adverse and disclaimer opinions. The primary reason for the unqualified audit opinion this year was that the internal audit function did not evaluate reliably the integrity of financial and reporting information and performance information. And again, I think the AG will deal with these matters. In terms of performance information, the GPW managed to achieve 37 of its 54 targets, 68%. An improvement from the 61% of targets achieved in 2012-13, but less than the 69% of targets achieved in 2011-12. As in previous years, most of the unmet targets emanate from challenges encountered in relocating and recapitalizing the entity, as well as continued challenges in recruiting and retaining sufficient skilled staff. And like in previous years, the reliability of the rate of achievement against predetermined objectives or performance indicators was not highlighted by the AG in 2013-14. So performance indicators are more reliable. The performance indicators are in the annual report are divided into 4 main sections, 3 of which are branches and one which is HR and transformation. The operations and production branch established itself as the preferred, aimed at establishing the GPW as the preferred security fence on the African continent. And a total of 8 out of their 10 targets for this branch were achieved. It's the best performing of the branches, and also the main service delivery branch. The strategic management branch managed to achieve 15 out of its 21 targets, or 71%. The finance branch achieved 8 out of 13, or 61% of its indicators. And then lastly, the HR unit achieved 7 out of its 10 indicators, or 70%. The HR remains the least performing of the budget programs, and the indicator for revised job descriptions and evaluations on page 93 is reported as not met, but the description indicates that the target was in fact exceeded, so there's a not correlation of the information on that particular indicator on page 93 of the UBW report. There's just an issue with the layout, which makes the annual report for the UBW a little difficult to understand, in that its performance against strategic objectives is not clearly distinguished from performance against performance indicators. And so there's a confusion as to how many of their targets are actually achieved. And the need for these very largely overlapping tables of performance to be separate is not clear. And that's basically just a question on the clarity of the report. Also, there are minor errors on page 87 and 88 indicating, for instance, performance individuals rather than performance indicators. And these kind of minor errors, although not as much of an issue with other entities, for the GPW, because they want to become the security principal for Africa and they're trying to establish this international credibility, this attention to minor details is more of an issue. The GPW has significantly increased its annual profit margin from just 15 million in 2008-09 to 149 million in 2012-2013-14. This is a 37% growth on previous years, despite operating costs having increased. This is since the cost of sales has been reduced by 31%, from 727 million to 500 million in 2013-14. Looking at HR, the GPW report 152 vacancies out of 700 approved posts, so 21% vacancy rate is high compared to other government departments. This is a minor improvement on the 22% vacancy rate in 2012-13. The highest vacancy rate was at the senior management level for a third year running, with only 64% of positions filled. This is in part due to a high turnover rate, where despite four appointments, there were also two terminations. So maintaining a high level of service delivery and audit performance despite this high vacancy rate is therefore quite commendable. There have been significant improvements in the vacancy rate for lower skilled staff, where there's only a 16% vacancy compared to 42% in previous years. There is also, as an indication of the difficulty in recruiting staff, for instance, the highly skilled production staff, which comprise the largest part of the service delivery of the department, earn only on average around 299,000 per annum for a relatively high skilled position. But this is a 30% increase in previous years. So they are at least getting salary increases. There was a higher than average appointment of contract employees, with 19 out of the 556 employees, or 16%, comprising contract positions. The GPW reports on the number of persons employed by race, disability, and gender, as per the Employment Equity Act, but they don't give an indication of what their targets are in this regard, or whether they've been met. So, but that said, 10 employees with disabilities employed by the GPW comprise 1.8%, which is higher than other entities, but less than previous years. Although the GPW was unable to establish a specialized learning academy, they have continued to have a good skills development program, to the extent that actually their skills development sometimes has an impact on their ability to retain staff, because the trained staff end up being purchased off by the private sector. So this continues to be an issue of staff retention for the GPW. So I'm sorry to have to rush through all of that. The information is contained there, and the related questions again are included at the bottom there. So without wasting any more of your time, I'm done. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and I think you have performed even opinion, though, that you have not saved us the 10 minutes, but I think you have performed, you have done well, and I could not stop you because we really needed your input to be able to make heads and tails to the presentations that we will receive from the specific entities and the department. And I hope that the department as well as the entities have got copies of our committee researchers' presentation. If they are not there, can we just try and make sure that they get copies? Because we're talking about them, they should be knowing exactly what we're saying about them. If they are capable of responding to some of those things, then they can actually enrich their presentations in time and make sure that they talk to some of the things that we have raised in the specific document. Honorable members, I think that should be empowering us to invite the Auditor General, and from the Auditor General, I think we are expecting to see Mr. Naveen Mullo and Ms. Monique Clear. I'm told that Mr. Yassin Yeo is not going to be with us. I'm not sure whether it's already arrived, but otherwise then the two guests are the ones that have been confirmed at the start of this particular engagement, that they are already here. And I will then request the Auditor General's office. I'm not sure whether we're going to get the presentation from Mr. Naveen Mullo or Ms. Monique Clear. Last time, I think we were taken through by Mr. Mullo. And then do us a favor and get in into your briefing. You are now given the platform. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Teacher, I think you've received two documents from our office. You've signed the briefing note, it's got the detail, and then it's a slideshow presentation which is listed at the high level. I'm going to take you through the slideshow. We'll start today with the reputation promise. I am hoping that at the end of the session, we would have enabled the committee here, as our reputation promise say, enabling oversight, accountability and governance through auditing, and thereby building public confidence, but so concept from our perspective. Hopefully when we go through this, we will maybe shed some light on some of the matters that have been raised, and also put you in a position as a committee to 16 audit opinion, that means it, you know, there's no findings on compliance with rules and regulations, or no findings on legal objectives. And what you found there also was, I think, in that year, if you had a qualification of the department, but the other entities, you know, you had compliance, certain other entity, which you think the GPW had a compliance item. But moving forward from 12-13 to 13-14, you see that you had marked it there. We say over the years you had a net regression in the audit outcomes, and I think that is exceptional. And then we move forward and explain what those net, where those regressions are. We said basically your IEC moved from clean opinion to an opinion with findings and other methods, and your Department of Home Affairs moved from qualification to a disclaimer of audit opinion, and then your GPW was saying, well, it's unchanged. You look at the findings last year and look at it this year, in terms of the audit opinion and audit outcomes, unchanged. The overall regression audit outcomes, we say, in terms of the financial statements, as we indicated earlier, it's you've got a modified opinion or a disclaimer of opinion on the Department of Home Affairs. On compliance with legislation, you find all the entities have had issues in terms of compliance with legislation. I think the Department of Home Affairs has got the most significant number of items that they're on compliance issues with. Then in the GPW, you've had issues on internal audits, which we'll come to later on. And then on the IEC, you had issues in terms of your financial statements. You know, we speak of non-compliance related to material misstatements in the financial statements. In terms of performance, the department and the IEC, you had issues there in terms of factual findings. I just want to just touch on something that you know, we had in our previous session, where attention was made when we dealt with the department's report in terms of the disclaimer. I think just to put it in perspective, I think we must just make sure that the report of the Auditor General only gives an opinion on the financial statements itself. The performance information will only report factual findings. So what you find in those audit reports are factual findings. Those are not opinions. Okay? I think when the Auditor General sense of readiness in terms of the public safety to express an audit opinion, then obviously there will be a promulgation in that respect. But at the moment, we do certain procedures and we just report in our audit report factual findings, and so it's not an opinion on the performance information. When you speak of the assurance levels, now we speak of different assurance levels where we see management gives a certain level of assurance. Then the oversight committees and your internal audits and your governance structures give certain levels of assurance. I think if you're looking at this, when you look at this table, you'll say, in terms of the assurance level, it's very concerning in the sense that if you look at the, I'm going to concentrate on the red items and the yellow items. It's concerning in terms of, if you look at that, where we say it's marked red, it says senior management, because your first line of defense is your senior management. And they need to provide assurance that information is valid, accurate, and complete. That's also to enable management oversight decision making. So what we say, we've got a red item there, and we say in terms of senior management assurance, and that relates to the department. Then we move over to your accounting office and accounting authority, and we said in those areas, we've got say to provide some assurance. You know, for most of the other entities, some assurance. I think the next red item is on the internal audit unit, and then on the second level of assurance, that is relating to the GPW, the audit finding relating to the GPW on non-compliance. It also gives leads up to this level of assurance that's been provided. I think what it relates to basically is that the work that was done by the internal audit did not cover significant matters in terms of their audit claim. They didn't cover all the issues, and as a result, you know, the information to give them assurance in respect of financial performance of their method, the assessment was they did not do adequate work in that regard. So that's why the rating that you find there in the internal audits in terms of the IEC, sorry, the GPW is there. positive to take from this is to say, if you take your department, saying, well, you've got in some sort of audit units that you that has progressed, that has improved over the years, and they are now well positioned to provide a level of assistance that the department requires in terms of implementing action plans and addressing certain key issues. And the same goes for the IEC, that you've got these functions that's going to assist management and also provide assurance to, as I say, your oversight bodies and your governance structures. We move on to the next slide and we look at the key controls. And we said, in the key controls, there are certain areas, if you look at the red markings, we look at, say, effective leadership, audit action plans, proper record keeping, daily and monthly controls, and review and monitoring compliance. Those areas, when there will be a question, the question that will be on everyone's lips is to say, when you go to this portfolio and look at all the plans, saying, what can be done? And you're saying, these are the areas we need to look at in order to address the matters that are plaguing, that's plaguing the department and the matters. And then to take the IEC back to a clean audit opinion and to address the matters at GPW. You're saying effective leadership, so that means you're saying that firstly, you must hold people accountable. You must put proper policies and processes as leadership of the organization, proper policies and procedures in place so that that there's guidance. And then there you monitor the implementation of those policies and procedures. Compliance with those policies and procedures. I think quite often you put processes in place and you're not checking whether people are complying with these processes and you're not seeing whether they are working. And then the other part, and especially for the department, is your action plans. I think if we put everything into context for the department, if you take it back, for the past 2 years, say talking about 11, 12, 12, 13, the department was always in the back foot in the sense that you get an extension of the audit, you completed the audit. I think in last year it was the end of it, was around about the 26th of September, you enabled the department to take the exam on the 30th of September. The previous year it was sometime in October, I think the first week in October, where the audit was finalized. Now, if you look at that in context, you look at saying, okay, we finalized the 12-13 audit on the 30th of on the 26th of September. You're basically 6 months into the new financial year. But in that 6 months, you were concentrating on the previous financial year. So you then only had 6 months to devise proper processes, implement those processes, monitor compliance with those processes, make sure that you've got proper capacity. It's not really much time when you start looking at it. And so I think this year, although there was an extension of the audit time frame, that extension wasn't as significant as you had in the past year. So the department still had has time now to work on it. But as I said, in the previous years, those extensions had an impact on the department's ability to react timelessly to matters, the matters that were impacting on audit outcomes. So what we're saying is that your audit action plans stemming from the audit, that is both internal and external audit, departments should have robust action plans, detailed actions with milestones that will give them sort of a roadmap in terms of what needs to be done, and those need to be monitored. On the next slide, when we look at the risk areas, we say quality of submitted financial statements. We're saying all three entities, two of the entities, only one of the entities actually gave a proper set of financials on 31 May, the legislative time. So that's your GPW. We're saying there were no material adjustments to the financial statements that were submitted on 31 May. So we're saying as far as the numbers go, the audit found that the GPW actually produced a pretty good set of financial statements. The other two entities, your IEC and your department, did not do the same. But I think on the in that respect, your IAC, I think for the most part, they were not. I think there were only two errors basically regarding those financial statements. The department obviously had a lot of much more errors in terms of the submission of those financial statements. The expectation is that when you submit on 31 May, that there are sufficient processes in the department, that is, through management, through your internal audit, through your audit committee, through your accounting officer, that have interrogated these financial statements and can provide assurance that when you submit those financial statements on the 31st of May, that it's valid and the numbers are accurate, and it's a complete set of financial, it's got all the financial information, performance information that is required. And then the quality of submitted performance reports, again, you'll send to your GPW that produced a performance report that were of an adequate or acceptable standard. Again, you have your department and your IAC that had matters, factual findings on the reported performance information. Supply chain management, fortunately, I'll touch on the regular expenditure as well later on, but there are no material matters that warrant reporting in the audit report on supply chain management. So that's a commendable thing. And then when we look at human resource management, we said the department, I think we touched on again the issues of human resources, non-compliance, so human resource management, also on leave management. I think what was also key message to note is that what you should recall is that if you start comparing the audit outcomes from this year to last year, one of the qualification areas last year was regarding the leave balances. The department has managed to now correct it in terms of for this financial year, in terms of the errors were not that material, but I think also in correcting those leave balances and correcting, going back and correcting all the leave that was supposed to be captured in prior year, that was only captured in the current financial year, it leads to a non-compliance finding. Okay. And the expectation is that if there are proper processes, that people are doing what they're supposed to do in terms of supervisor, you've got proper processes that you reconcile, that you check that someone has facility forms and it's captured and processed, and also when the official state accountability for itself, that you're making sure that whatever you submit manually, it's put onto the system, then we have the expectation that that area will improve going forward. If we look at the most common root causes, we say slow response time management. And basically what we're saying here is that, as I explained, I think from the client's perspective, is that your previous audits, you're always on the back foot because they finished at a late stage, you were concentrating on fixing the past, that you didn't have really much time to implement proper processes going forward. So we say slow response time management, I think, like I say, functioning on the front. Key official appropriate competence, what we identify that there are capacity matters that need to be addressed. I think it's particularly you take the department, you take capacity, it's both bodies and it's also expertise. It's looking at your processes, mapping out your processes in the department. What is it that has a financial impact? And when you look at those processes that have a financial impact, do I understand what the requirements of the treasury framework is? And does the people that work with these areas, work in these areas, understand what the requirements of the framework is? Then we see instability of vacancies in key positions. I think we're all aware that from the department's perspective that for a significant part of the financial year, the department operated without a chief financial officer. And there is an impact. If you look at most departments that operate without chief financial officers, it's a recipe for disaster, so to speak. And if you look at it, the previous chief financial officer left basically when the resubmission of the audit, the financial statements, for the 12-30 So there's no continuity. You understand? So you may start in action, someone may start in initiative, but they're not yet to see it through. And then you see, you start it, and minute number 99, you have to go back in, reinvent the wheel, so to speak. So those methods, and that comes again, points back to say, your policies and procedures. You know, if someone writes something down, and says, you know, and you have key milestones in your audit actions, then it's easy for someone else to come and pick up the reins with someone else left off and say, okay, this is how far we went. Let's get on with this. This is what we need to do. But if that's missing, you know, like I said, then you're reinventing the wheel each time. And when you come around about March, and you're trying to, and it's a financial year, and you're trying to do an entire financial year, then it becomes a problem. You're now heading for a disaster, so to speak. And then, then we have the status of key commitments. Now, these commitments, these are all commitments from the executive, from the minister. This is the current and previous minister what we've tracked the status, tracked these commitments, you know, and through our engagements and obviously assessing. What you'll see is that the bottom part where we're saying that what we have, the one green part is that, okay, we know how the financial year end. The chief financial officer has been appointed now. The bottom part of the commitments, those four blue blocks, this comes from a meeting that we held very recently that was held between the Auditor General and the Minister, where certain key commitments were made by the Minister in terms of addressing the deficiencies and addressing the matters relating to the department. And those, this starts off next week with the workshop between ourselves and the department, where what we will be doing is taking the department through the audit process, taking it through the details in terms of what sort of information is required, and then also the department's going to put the process in place. The minister has given these four commitments, and what we will do is track these as the audit progress. The next question is, what are the next steps? I think from the committee's perspective, we look at the next slide. This is a slide that I presented at the capacity building session. You'll see we have end-year reporting. Okay. And we say, monitor and take corrective action. It's right in the left-hand corner there. So we say, from the committee, what are the next steps? It's looking at the commitments, both from the executive and from management, making sure that management has action plans in place to address each of the areas. As I said, you need to look at both internal and external audit findings. What you find, as I say, from the department perspective, the department's internal audit has actually done well during the financial year. I think the department just didn't have the time to implement the, you know, or address the issues that were identified by internal audit. So management has to put action plans in place with clear milestones that will be monitored on a quarterly basis. Then the assurance providers, I think from a community perspective, again, the assurance providers, do they provide adequate assurance regarding the actions that the department has taken and are they on track? And then the accountability perspective is saying, okay, from the accountability perspective, are people being held accountable for non-compliance, non-performance. And then moving over to the next slide, we're saying the portfolio committee mandate, we're saying both the oversight component is sitting here, you know, in terms of what the portfolio committee, the responsibilities of the portfolio committee in terms of Rule 201, and we're saying looking at the mandate and the accountability side, we're saying, well, it's basically now with this information that we provide in terms of the audit outcome is taking it forward in terms of these areas here. Going forward, obviously, there will be the department's strategic plan to see whether it's aligned to the national development plan. Looking at, when you look at the performance information, it says quarterly reporting to the committee here to say, to give you some level of assurance that things are progressing as expected, that, that the department entities are on their way to achieving better audit outcomes for the 14-15 financial year. And what we're saying is that in the final analysis, saying, well, if there are, if the department has robust action plans, or the entities have robust action plans, if they have strong oversight and governance structures in terms of inter-audit committees, if people are held accountable, there is proper communication policies and procedures, then you sort of have an end state, you understand, where you reach a state where you have good service delivery and you have improved audit outcomes. I think as the auditor general reaches here to provide you with that information in your favor. Next year there's a document that we put out, I think the booklet has been made available to all the members here. I think it gives guidance in terms of what remedies are available to the committee in terms of legislation in addressing any matters that, you know, that are dealt with in terms of, you know, any transgressions in terms of legislation. And then basically then, Chair, we've come to the end of our presentation. I think what we'll do, we'll take questions on it. Obviously, we're dealing with the slideshow, and obviously, and the detail briefing document, so any questions on that? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, and I think you've come very handy to save us the 10 minutes on behalf of our researcher, and probably we'll be back on track. Honourable members, I think we have received the report of the Auditor General, and I think one crucial point that he raised is that the audit opinion, it's not expressed on performance, it's purely on the financial statements, if I have understood that. I think it should be assisting us as well to understand what are the limitations of the audit opinion, and not to make it a struggle over issues that it's not supposed to be talking to. And then when it comes to performance, it says, no, they are expressing factual information on performance correctly. Honourable members, I think we have received that. We should be getting to a period where we can raise questions. Of course, it's clarity questions, because they can't answer on behalf of the department. It's clarity questions on their work in relation to the department and of course the entities. It is our time, and we should have done with this session of clarity if we are to stay within our program at half past 11. We should have completed our exercise of clarity with our Auditor General. There you are. Honorable thing.
Thank you, Albert. Just two questions just to understand one thing. You said earlier that the financials are an opinion and the outcomes are, what's the word you used, findings. So I take it then that the financials are sample audit and then the findings are more in-depth audit to be able to make that determination. If my understanding of it is true, it would mean then that in a report that you put on the table, in a situation like this in Home Affairs, I'm just talking about the department itself, having regrets, the situation is probably worse than what it is indicated in the documents. And is that a fair comment to make? time to time you find that there is irregular expenditure, fruitless expenditure, or any negative findings that you have. And then there are some recommendations and action steps put into place to correct the thing. In the year that follows up, do you actually check whether or not those things are done and then report on it? I did pick up in the report of this year that that there was some response to it, but I kind of get a sense that there's a full report on the previous year. These were the problems, these were the recommendations, and these were the lists of the stuff that were actually collected or nothing was done about it. So just to explain that again, whether or not you look into that. And then the last one is, I'm not sure if I understood you correctly, when you talked about in line with the MDP, to check whether those programs are in line with the MDP. Is that something that we do or is something that your office does? I mean, if it's something that you do, is there a separate report that's presented somewhere where you actually check the compliance with the MDP itself? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Is there any other one that has got interest to raise a point of clarity or? I think I need to thank the presentation because it looks like I think it has been comprehensive and clear.
Thank you very much, Chair. I just want to check on the report on the Auditor General on page 148.4 and another page on 150.21 where he raised concerns about the things that were not reported, the Department of Revenue and all those things. If you can give us a clarity on that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think if you grasp all the questions, please just try to respond to those that you can respond and can give us more information if you have in relation to those as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'm just going to answer these questions in terms of, I'll start off with